Jeff Bezos wants people to trust the media. American citizens overwhelmingly agree on a few key voting issues. The new airline rules are pretty much useless. That and a lot more on today's Random Thoughts. Hello and welcome to episode number 299 of the Random Thoughts podcast. That is spelled R-A-N-D-U-M-B, thoughts.com online. I am your host, Darren O'Neill. Got a really big week coming next week, episode number 300 of this show. And of course, there's a little election going on in the United States at the same time. Very nice for all that to just be coordinated together. So, of course, the news cycle is in full swing. The propagandists are out there on both sides yelling things at each other. Not a whole lot of fun, really, to watch at this point. I'm always curious what the tipping factor is for those who claim that they don't know who they're voting for. Usually, I think it is the economy, but we live in a different world now where people get their news in different ways. Podcast being one of them. You're lucky you got podcast, although you have to be careful there as well, because there are plenty of people doing podcasts that want to spread nothing but propaganda from one side of the political aisle. But there have been a few stories worth mentioning, and then we'll talk a little bit more about news and what's going on with the news, especially the Washington Post. But just before recording, the news broke that the Supreme Court has ruled that Virginia, yes, they can remove 1,600 suspected non-citizens from the voter rolls. And Virginia is not the only one involved in a story like this. There were a few of these things going on, and it's always the talk around elections. Well, what do you do when you think you have non-citizens on the voter rolls? I don't think it's any surprise, although it does show a flaw in the Supreme Court system, that justices, I mean, can you guess which of the justices dissented? Can you? I think you can. Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Jackson Ketanji Brown Jackson. Is that it? Wait, no, that Jackson Ketanji Brown Jackson, that can't be right. That's in the quote here from just the news. It's Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's not Jackson Ketanji. But this, again, this is where the media. I should have been more careful when I cut and pasted. I should have proofread it, but no. Sometimes you assume things are going to be right and they're not. But of course it is the liberal justices who dissented on a ruling removing non-citizens from the voter rolls. In only 1,600, which I don't think would rise to the level of causing anything major, but you don't know. And this is something that the country is dealing with, and it's very interesting. And we will have some very telling information, I think, from a Gallup poll coming up in just a little bit. But when you have three justices of the Supreme Court dissent from a ruling that would seem to be pretty cut and dry, we are seeing that there is indeed a political influence on the Supreme Court, and there simply should not be. It works in both ways, do not get me wrong. But the Supreme Court, the concept would be that the justices that rise to the level of being appointed to the highest court in the land could be able to do their jobs without bringing politics into it, without bringing their bias into it, because human beings have the ability, human beings can understand that they have a bias and then overcome that. Meaning you might not like what the result of the ruling is, but if it is the right ruling by law, then you do it. You do not dissent on something because you don't like the result. Like, well, what is the law? And is this within the law? There really shouldn't be a whole lot of cases that are as split as most of them are. But again, this is because politics now has become an issue in the Supreme Court. And it shouldn't. It was created in such a way. Justices, you do not have a boss. You don't have anybody that can fire you. It's a lifetime appointment. I know a lot of people don't like that, but part of the reason why it's a lifetime appointment is you cannot make a ruling that makes a president say angry, and then they can say, no, no, you're out of here. You're fired. No, that's the reason why the initial concept was like, well, no, it's a lifetime appointment, so they don't have to worry about being influenced by politics. Let's try to insulate this group so they can do the job, stay above the fray, if you will. And that is certainly not the reality of the Supreme Court at this point on both sides. How do you fix that? I don't know. I mean, you certainly don't pack the court like Kamala Harris wants to do, saying, well, let's just put 10 people in that we like. And these idiots that think this is a good idea, it's like, well, then when the other side wins again, and they will, then you got 20 justices, and they're like, well, now let's put 20 more in that we like, so we can, but sooner or later, you'll have everybody in the country will be a judge on the Supreme Court. Maybe that wouldn't be so bad. But of course, the three justices that dissented didn't really say why. Questions of illegals on voter rolls are legitimate. We are seeing it more and more. Of course, the more illegals that are in the country, and I feel bad for a lot of the illegals who maybe don't understand the laws of the land, but ignorance is no excuse. It should be very clear at every polling place, and I'm sure this is not the case, at every polling place, there should be signs, there should be a pamphlet that you hand out to everybody before they go in to vote in every language known to man, even Klingon, that says if you are not a citizen of the United States and you cast a vote, you are committing a felony in the United States. And there should be a mandatory 1 year jail sentence if you are caught voting at that point and are not a citizen. You would cut down a lot on people voting that shouldn't. I mean, there would still be cheating, I'm sure. People look for every last little bit that they can, but I think it would certainly go a long way to help. And I don't understand three members of the Supreme Court of the United States of America dissenting on a ruling to remove non-citizens from the voting rolls. Rich Anderson, who is the chair of the Republican Party in Virginia, said, quote, "Democrat lawlessness will no longer stand in a nation that is of laws, not of men," end quote. I mean, that may be pushing it just a little bit, but it's a step in the right direction. It's a step in the right direction that I think needs to be taken. And I think that a majority of the people in the country agree with that, which brings us right into the Gallup poll, which was just done at the beginning of October. And the questions they asked were about all things voting. And really, two main questions that I think shed more than enough light on our current situation. So the Gallup poll was, in general, do you favor or oppose each of the following election law policies? The first, do you require people who are registering to vote for the first time to provide a proof of citizenship? That was the question asked. Do you require people who are being registered? Do you want to require people who are registering to vote for the first time to provide proof that they're actually citizens of the United States? Overall, 83% of the respondents said yes, that should be a requirement. 15% said no. Those are the commies. Those are the people that really want to cheat. 83%. Let's break that down by party, shall you? Want, just do the math in your head right now and see if you can figure out which party is going to be the highest tier on wanting to require citizenship proof. Republicans, 96% want people to provide proof of citizenship. 84%, no, not Democrats, independents want people to provide a proof of citizenship. So 96% Republican, 84% independent, and 66% of Democrats, obviously the party of want to cheat. But with that said, that's being unfair to the two-thirds of Democrats who also want there to be a proof of citizenship when somebody is registering to vote. So I will ask you, are the Democrats in charge that have been fighting this for decades, are they doing the will of the people? If this Gallup poll is anywhere near correct, and 83% of the citizens of this country want people to provide proof of citizenship in order to register to vote, 66% of Democrats, two-thirds, that would cover having a law passed. I mean, most of the things in the United States, all you need is a half plus one. The more important things, usually you can get up to a higher percentage. Two-thirds of the Democrats, 84% of the independents, 96% of Republicans want this. Why has this not been done? The Republicans have tried to pass these kind of things. The Democrats fight it. Why do they fight it? There's only one answer I can come up with. I mean, I'm not a Mensa genius or anything, I'm sure. But if you can come up with another reason why the Democrats who currently hold office do not want people to prove they are citizens in order to get on the voter rolls, let me know. Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, at randomthoughts.com, or on Twitter, Darren O'Neill, D-A-R-R-E-N-O-N-E-I-L-L. Nearly echoing those responses, which makes a lot of sense. The question was also asked, should we require all voters to provide photo ID at the voting place in order to vote? 84% said yes. So you're up one from providing proof of citizenship, but that's within the margin of error. And also 15 said no. Again, those 15, how you doing, Democrats? When you break this down by party, who wants you to show photo ID? Well, the Democrats, they really must fall off here because they don't want to do that, right? No. 98% of Republicans, 84% of independents, and 67% of Democrats up one. Again, I'm sure within the margin of error from the previous question. But yes, two-thirds of Democrats who answered the Gallup poll want people to prove they're a citizen to be able to get on the voter rolls, and then they want them to show voter photo ID when voting. So you're saying, well, who's not liking this? Let's break it down. Let's break it down by, it must be a racist thing, right? Well, for that first question requiring people to provide proof of citizenship, 87% of the white people said yes, and 76% of the people of color. And on the photo ID, 86% white, 80% person of color. So I don't know who the Democrats are going to point to and say, they don't want this. No, we're doing this for the citizens, not requiring photo ID, not requiring people prove that they are citizens in order to get on the voter rolls. Anybody that has gone through the system understands how easy it is to get on the voter roll if you really want to. The things that are required are idiotic. I'm sure each state is a little bit different, but go look up what your state's requirements are and what they will take for a form of identification. Things like, oh, bring in a utility bill. Well, you know how hard it is to print up a new utility bill with whatever address you want and whatever name you want on it? It's not hard. There's this thing called a computer and a printer. It's not like your utility bills have some kind of special hologram that just can't be forged. Absolutely insane how easy it is. If you wanted to do so, now they'll say, well, it's a felony. Well, what a lot of people don't know, a lot of people don't care. And when you are in a society like we are right now, where lawlessness is not being gone after, it is not being on the, really, it's not on the list of things that your local DA is probably going to prosecute for, then why worry about it? You could walk into a store, walk out with $950 worth of stuff, wave at the police, and be like, well, that's just a misdemeanor, no big deal. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to arrest me. No. Do you think people are really worried about the penalties for illegally voting? I mean, it's one of the reasons why the Republicans are like, we really need to get everybody that we can out to the polling place, out to vote, because it's important to throw as many votes as you can into the system. It makes it a lot harder for the chicanery to go on. But when you try to make the case that it's hard to get on the voter roll, it's not. When you try to make the case that it's hard to vote as somebody else, it's not. My buddy Larry Blydner, that I do the Planet Rage show with, and he has a great show of his own, thatlarryshow.com. It has happened to him recently where he walked in to vote and somebody's like, nope, you already voted. And he's like, no, I did not. Because you know how hard it is to get somebody else's ballot, kids. Well, here in Illinois, all you have to do is walk in, give the name, give the address, and then sign something. And they don't really look at the signatures. The signatures never match. You scribble something. Even better yet, put a cast on your hand or something like that and be like, oh, I can't really sign well right now, but that's me. They're not allowed to ask you for any ID. You can just walk in as long as you know a name and an address. You can go get that ballot right now. But the Democrats will tell you, no, it's really hard to cheat in elections. No, it's not. And guess what, Democrats? The people that are the actual citizens who say they're in your party, they want photo ID to vote. They want people to prove they are citizens in order to get on the voter rolls. Why aren't you doing it, Democrats? Kamala, Joey, Schumer, Pelosi, why aren't you doing it? would love to know if there's any other reason anybody can come up with beyond we really like to cheat. Be sure to let me know. There was another question, less interesting, but it was, do you believe that people should be removed from the voter rolls registration list if they don't vote in any election over a 5-year period? This I found to be a slightly interesting question. I mean, it doesn't tell a whole lot, but when you think about it, it makes a certain amount of sense. If somebody is not voting, they may be dead. They may have moved. How long do you leave somebody live on your voter rolls? I mean, 200 years, what is it? Chicago, I mean, you could vote long after dead. But there were still a decent amount of people, I think, that want this. 35%, so a third of the people in the country, little over, believe that if you don't vote for a 5-year period, you should be kicked off the voter rolls no matter what, so then you would have to re-register. Breaking that one down by party, 51% of Republicans, so a majority of Republicans, believe if you don't vote, you should lose your spot unless you re-register. 36% of independents, which is over a third. And you want to guess the number of Democrats? Just come on, put it in your head. What number do you think? How many Democrats want that to happen? 16. So yeah, they're not in favor. The race breakdown, white 39%, people of color 29%. Not all that different. And no matter what, this election cycle is going to tell us a lot. The swing states, and a lot of people want to complain because it appears that certain states are controlling the destiny of the country. And that may be true, but it's true because states like California and Illinois, New York, have gone so crazy liberal that there's no shot. And there are states out there that are so conservative, but they're overall smaller states. So you need a lot more of them. But the concept that there are states that are always going to vote one way, is that good for democracy? No, not really. Because the reality of the situation is Washington doesn't really have to worry too much about your state. No, none of these candidates are like, we really better get out to Illinois because we're worried we're not going to win it there. No, almost never happens. And it's because of the way the system is, but the Electoral College has been talked about here and other places. Makes a lot of sense, and it offers protections, and it makes sure that the smaller states have a say rather than going to a straight popular vote. But this year, the popular vote is within reach, according to a lot of the pollsters. And again, I never believe the pollsters. You have to wait for the end result. And even then, you're going to have to worry about numbers being fixed and cheating and all of that. But the pollsters are rarely right. But some of them are showing, take it for what it's worth, that Donald Trump has the popular vote within his grasp. And there are news stories, of course, again, that aren't sourced by anybody with a name, that say James Carville has been telling the big Democratic donors, this is not going to be a good year for the Democrats. Again, take that for what it's worth. Is it true? I don't know. And I don't normally like to even mention these kind of things. But we are within a week of the election, so soon we will know if that turns out to be true or not. Of course, the big story is that a comedian at a rally that Donald Trump had over at Madison Square Garden. You know, the Hitler-like rally, because it's at Madison Square Garden. It's going to be just like that Nazi rally. MSNBC even interspersed with the video coverage of the Trump rally, they put in video from the 1939, 40, whatever it was, Nazi rally that was at Madison Square Garden, which was in a different place. I didn't even realize. I mean, I guess I should have. But that was a different Madison Square Garden. It was rebuilt. And thanks to my buddy Larry, again, thatlarryshow.com, for letting me know that information. Because it, like, you can't even be like, oh, this is hallowed ground. They're taking it back to the exact same place. But the Democrats getting things right, that doesn't really go together. But the Democrats are pretending they're all up in arms. And I think this is working in Trump's favor. Stick with me for a second here. So there was a comedian that was on the bill named Tony Hinchcliffe, who is a roast comedian, which means he says really bad things about a whole lot of people. He has said some very good or bad, depending how you like to qualify that kind of comedy, things about people, and you can find them on YouTube. Not hard to do. But he made a joke that, oh, there's a big bunch of garbage floating around in the ocean, and I think we call it Puerto Rico. And a lot of people are saying that that is racist, and I don't understand, because he didn't say anything about the Puerto Rican people at all. And it just is the society we live in again. Oh, no, that's racist. It's like, you have no idea what racist is. Absolutely no idea. But I think Trump was kind of playing 4D chess, although he is claiming he didn't never heard of this comedian, doesn't know who put him on the bill. I think that makes Trump look bad, to say, I don't even know who put him on the bill. You know, we had a comedian, never heard of him. You're in charge. I mean, I understand you're delegating this, but then you have to know who was actually in charge. If it was one of your kids, whoever it was that decided this guy should be on the bill. And you can't say you just didn't know. That looked bad. That was the one bad thing for this, for Trump. But otherwise, I kind of thought maybe they were playing 4D chess, because you bring a comedian who was known for saying roasting type things, and you put him on the stage. You know he's going to say some things that are going to get people mad. That's his job. You know he's going to say things that are going to go viral, most likely. And in Trump, if he's playing 4D chess, and maybe he still is, you get a comedian that a lot of people have never heard of, Tony Hinchcliffe, and I never heard of him, so I'm one of them. And he says something about Puerto Rico, and that's him. He's saying it. It's not Donald Trump saying it. It's not J.D. Vance saying it. It's not anybody in politics saying it. It's a comedian saying it. But what do we get as a result? We get Joe Biden calling Trump supporters garbage. The deplorables moment all over again. Except Biden's not actually running. He's between naps. He wakes up and says things that seemingly could sink Kamala's campaign. Is it being done on purpose? I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But he said, the only thing I see that's garbage are his supporters. Then he backed it off later after called on it. Like, well, no, I just meant that supporter, that Tony Hinchcliffe, that comedian guy. That's who I meant was garbage, not all of Trump's supporters. But that's not what he said. Joey went into I am big, mad, angry Joey again and said, the only people I see that are garbage are his followers, his supporters, whatever word he used. But it was not about the one guy. Now, when Joey said it, you could back it down all you want. But they want to claim that it's racist, and they want to claim that it's horrible, and they want to claim that you probably shouldn't even have a comedian out there because they say crazy stuff and you can't control them. But it was definitely racist. What, the Tim Walz rally yesterday? You can't make this stuff up, kids. At the Tim Walz rally yesterday, comedian George Lopez was there. A lot of people know George. He's had various television shows. He's got crazy long hair now. He looks like he should be playing the Jerry Garcia part in The Grateful Dead. But George Lopez got up at the Tim Walz rally. You know, the guy that said the Tony Hinchcliffe thing was totally racist. George Lopez got up at the Tim Walz rally yesterday and said, I was going to bring a clip, and I'm like, well, I don't really want to bring a clip. I don't normally bring clips, but I can tell you what he said because I wrote it down. Comedian George Lopez at the Tim Walz rally yesterday said, quote, Donald Trump said he was going to build the wall, and George Lopez said, you'd better build it in one day, because if you leave that material out there overnight, end quote. So, yeah, for those of you who have no sense of humor, the joke is the Mexicans were going to steal all of the material because the Mexicans are thieves. See, now that sounds racist because he's talking about the actual people. Where the comedian that was at the Trump rally was talking about the country being floating garbage. And there have been cases, I mean, if you have ever followed the news, Puerto Rico has had problems with garbage issues, not being able to handle the amount of garbage. He didn't say anything about the Puerto Rican people. I mean, they're the ones suffering in Puerto Rico when things aren't going exactly right. But then George Lopez, well, that is about the Mexican people. If you leave that material out there overnight, what are you saying, George? Well, George will be like, well, I'm Mexican, so it's definitely not racist, huh? It's the same kind of humor. Absolutely the same kind of humor. And the, I was almost going to swear there. The people in the Harris Walz side are like, oh no, the Trump guy was horribly racist. But George Lopez, we heard one Democrat that was like, oh no, that was not the right thing to say. That was a racist comment brought up at a Tim Walz rally. No! Why is that? And which one is worse? Do you, really, think about both jokes and tell me which one you think is worse. Which one is targeting the people and their character? When you say Puerto Rico is like a big bunch of floating garbage, it's like when you know that Puerto Rico's had a problem handling the amount of garbage and the government is incompetent to take care of such things. Does it say anything bad about the Puerto Rican people at all? How is it racist? It doesn't even mention the people. Now, George Lopez, his joke, well, yeah. We all know what his joke was saying. George Lopez was telling us again that all Mexicans are thieves and they're going to run out there and get that material. Well, maybe not all, but enough where that material is not going to last it if it sits out there overnight. If anyone sees any news coverage of the George Lopez comments, do let me know over on X, Darren O'Neill, or via email, darren@randomthoughts.com. Because I doubt that's even going to make the radar. And anybody that is fair will tell you that that is a racist joke. And yes, the Democrats are going to ignore it. This is why people do not trust the news media. And there was an interview with John Solomon, who is the guy behind justthenews.com. One of the few news sites that I trust are going to have their facts straight more than most. I'm not saying I never double check things and dive a little bit deeper into them, but usually a pretty good source of information. He was talking about how Americans are craving unbiased news now more than ever, which is why this show, the Random Thoughts Podcast, should be huge. Because this is what I try to bring you. And I have a biased commentary. And politically, I am conservative. But when something comes out, again, that is not what I like, but is the truth, I will report that to you and cover it. Because any show, whether it's news or commentary, if they are going to turn a blind eye, and yeah, the guy who currently has one, if you're going to do that to the information that you don't like, I don't think you're providing much of a service, much of a reason for people to tune in. So I think John Solomon is right. This is, I believe, the reason why Bezos is not endorsing Kamala Harris. Here is a quote from Jeff Bezos from the TennesseeStar.com website. Quote, "Let me give an analogy. Voting machines must meet two requirements. They must count the vote accurately, and people must believe they count the vote accurately. The second requirement is distinct from and just as important as the first. Likewise, with newspapers, we must be accurate and we must be believed to be accurate. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but we are failing on the second requirement. Most people believe the media is biased. Presidential endorsements do nothing to tip the scales of an election. No undecided voters in Pennsylvania are going to say, I'm going with newspaper A's endorsement. None. What presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias, a perception of non-independence," end quote. Again, that from Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon, owner of the Washington Post. And I agree with him. I don't know anybody. Maybe there are some people out there who are like, well, I'm just going to wait for the Washington Post. I'm going to wait for the LA Times. I'm going to wait for the Chicago Tribune to tell me who to vote for. But I don't think there are many. And when you see that a paper has endorsed a particular candidate with the current climate that we have of the news media, it just makes people think you're a propagandist rather than we've done our homework and this is an honest representation of who we think is going to be better for the country. That doesn't happen. Just like we had the three justices, the liberal justices, who decided that they were going to dissent on removing non-citizens from the voter rolls. The newspapers are not going to give you an answer that they have researched. It's not a question. This is where we have gotten to. When it's no longer a question of which party the candidate's going to be from when the newspaper endorses them, then it's useless, no matter which side of the aisle the candidates happen to be on. Once you're like, hey, we're a liberal paper, or, hey, once we're a conservative paper, I don't know if there are many of those out there anymore. But once you are known for one side over the other, then your opinion means nothing. Your news coverage means nothing because the people on the other side of the aisle now believe, usually rightfully so, that they cannot come to your paper, to your source, to your news, whatever it is, and get an honest reporting of the facts. Like the Supreme Court justices, I think a lot of these citizens in the United States expect their journalists, and there are opinion people and there are journalists. They expect their journalists to be able to be above the fray, to report a story accurately, whether they like it or not, to give you all of the information, even if it makes their political candidate look bad. And I don't think that's what we've had for a while now. I think there was a time where you had people who were giving you the news that, of course, had biases, but still took their job seriously enough to be like, hey, okay, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, but you know what? My job is to report the news accurately, whether it is good or whether it is bad for my side. The main thing is to be accurate. And we have gotten so far away from that. It would really be nice if somebody like Jeff Bezos, and I think Elon Musk is doing his bit with social media to at least allow the conservative voices to run free again. We didn't have that the last election, and I'm still not discounting the effect that that is going to have on this year's election. And that alone, I think, should be worth a few points for the Republicans because the information is being allowed to flow freely. But the concept of being biased in reporting, once you think a news source is biased, why do you go to it? I want a news source, as John Solomon said. People are craving unbiased news because I want to be able to go in, get the information, and make up my mind, process that information myself. And that was one of the things in the interview that John Solomon did with the Michael Patrick Leahy show, which I believe is probably on YouTube. But he said the media moved into a role of being Big Brother, which I thought was great because it works on so many different levels that they want to be like a Big Brother that's like, oh, I'm just going to explain this to you. You're just the dumb little kid, so I'm going to explain to you what this news means and what you should think about it. And of course, the other Orwellian Big Brother, well, that works too as well. When you can't get information from multiple perspectives, then you're probably not getting honest information. I could not survive and believe that I know what's going on if I consumed only media that was conservative, you know, or liberal, although a lot of people do that. They sit there and they want to be in the echo chamber. They want to just hear what they believe repeated back to them over and over and over. But this is what has made the product much less worth the money. When it comes to newspapers, a lot of them have died. The Washington Post, when this whole thing came out that they weren't going to endorse Kamala, there was reports that they lost about 200,000 subscribers. Now, I'm betting they may have gained some from the other side. And they may gain more if they really push towards being a not even necessarily centrist news organization, but as long as they push towards getting the facts right, I think a lot more people might jump on board. Although the price for a digital subscription, Mr. Bezos, that's a little bit crazy. I had a Washington Post article pop up and like, oh no, you really need to subscribe. Gear's a great deal. You can get it for $40 for the first year and then $120 a year after that for the digital to be able to access their website. That's absolutely insane. Nobody's going to pay that. Why? Because there are plenty of places to get your news free on the internet. Now, Mr. Bezos, if you actually start providing a service where the news is factual and people trust that what you're bringing does more fact checking than most, that is actually accurate, that is not playing political games, then it's worth something. I still don't think it's worth $40 a year to access a news website. But, you know, it's worth something. What that monetarily is, I don't know. Maybe $19.99 a year. But I think if you actually can prove that you are doing the job and trying to be above the bias, trying to get out of the political fray, I think you would pick up a lot more subscribers and a lower price would just make sense. And it's fine to have the editorial pages to allow opinion. That's what brings a little bit of spice to the paper. I get it. But your news reporting needs to be believed as being accurate. And if the reports are correct, the Washington Post is looking for conservative columnists. Hey, reach out to me, Bezos. I can write you some darn good stuff. One last story that I think is mainly the Democrats just trying to pretend they're doing something good, that it really doesn't make much difference at all. Oh, this was where the Washington Post article came in. There are new rules for airlines that can help you get speedy refunds. According to the Washington Post article, quote, under the law, airlines are required to proactively offer refunds rather than vouchers or credits without passengers having to ask for it. The money is due within 7 business days if the ticket was bought with a credit card and within 20 business days for other transactions. The law also spells out for the first time how long a delay must be to be qualified as significant enough for a refund. That would be 3 hours for a domestic flight and 6 hours for international trips. Teresa Murray, consumer watchdog director at the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, said, quote, this is a protection for airline passengers that's long overdue, end quote. Now, is it really a protection? Is it any? I don't understand when it comes to the way that airline tickets are bought, how this is a good thing. Basically, the only change here is if your flight is moved more than 3 hours for a domestic or more than 6 hours for an international trip, if you want a monetary refund, you will get one. The reality is most people want to get to where they're going. I mean, really, half of our trips are coming home. So you have to come home. If this happens on a flight coming home, you got nothing. So 50% already of your possible flights. I understand there may be layovers and there may be multi-hops and all that, but basically 50% of your traveling is coming home. Unless you're going around the world, then you probably don't worry about it. But for most of us, you take a vacation, you go someplace, you spend some time, you come home. Okay, if my flight's delayed more than 3 hours to come home, well, okay, I'm going to take a refund and then what? I'm going to go pay like 5-10 times more to get another flight? Because airline flights, they do not cost the same all the time. Did you know that? So how does this rule actually help knowing that last minute flights cost astronomically more? Why don't you put another law in for that? If you want to make this any kind of meaningful thing. And if you're going the other way, if you're going on vacation, well, normally you have hotels booked. There's usually things that are non-refundable. So who is this really helping? I want to know, does anybody out there think this is anything at all? Or again, just a waste of time and resources to put things into law that are really not helping anybody at all. Oh, your flight is delayed 3 hours. Here's your money back. Well, then how do I get home? Or how do I get to my vacation? I'm going to go buy a last minute ticket on another airline that's going to cost me 10 times what I just got my money back as? No. It doesn't make any sense. But you see the big things. Oh, the government made a big rule. Yes, they did. They made a big rule and it's going to help you get a speedy refund. It's not. It is not. Not if you want to actually get to the place you're going. Then you're just going to sit there and shut up and wait for the flight to go whenever it may be. This would only make sense for a very small amount of people. Probably business people that book last minute flights anyway and don't care about what the cost is. But for the average consumer, this means nothing. More propaganda just out there coming from the news media. More things like, hey, it's shiny. Look, they're trying to help. No, no, I am trying to help, which is why you are listening to the Random Thoughts Podcast, episode 299. Means the next episode, the day after the election next week, will be episode number 300. I haven't really thought it all out, but if you come in with a $300 donation for episode 300, there will be a mug or maybe a t-shirt or a mouse pad or some cards or something like that made up. I don't know if anybody is that. I was going to say crazy, but I'm thinking generous enough to do that. But just keep that in mind. If you come in big for episode 300, I will reward you for doing so. But this is a value for value podcast, which means you get to ask yourself, how much value have I gotten out of listening to this show? put a number on it that means something to you. Then go over to Random Thoughts, R-A-N-D-U-M-B, thoughts.com/donate. You can click the donate button to do a one-time or monthly through PayPal. You can use the QR codes or wallet addresses if you want to go the crypto route. You can use the P.O. box if you want Uncle Sam to handle your donation. If you're in the podcasting 2.0 ecosystem, you can boost. And you can stream Satoshis while listening along newpodcastapps.com. And if you're over on Patreon, you can still find us over there. We don't have any content there as of yet. Maybe I should. Episode 300, we could start a whole new thing. But if you're in that ecosystem, it is an option. And I appreciate everybody who has helped support this show over the last 6-7 years, however long this has been going on now. I do have a few people to thank for today, and also a correction on the last show. There was the largest donation came in from Anonymous via Satoshis, and I thought that was Dale Jr. It was not. So I apologize for assuming that on the last show, and thank you, Anonymous, for the last show's donation and for this show. Thank you to Dale Jr., who came in big, a 5,000 Satoshi boost. And he said, oh boy, I missed an episode. Yeah, I mean, that's bad, Dale Jr. You do not want to miss an episode. I had to switch shifts for some training and couldn't listen like normal and got behind on my regulars. And I thought I was all caught up, back on my regular schedule, and I'm listening to it now. Thanks for calling me out and keeping me up to date. Well, it's the least I can do. See, this is the beauty of the smaller podcast, the artisanal podcast, is that when we notice somebody's not listening, we can yell at them. So we appreciate your support, Dale Jr. He came in again with the 5,000 boost, and he listened to both episodes, which came out to 20,196 Satoshis, all added up, $18.15 in American money. While Bitcoin fluctuates back down a little bit today, but that is very much appreciated, Dale Jr. And thank you for listening and keeping in touch. I mean, that's the beauty of the Boostergram. Love hearing what you think of the shows and what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear, what you like, what you don't like. Dame Slamy came in also with the boost of 1111 and then 5,700 streaming, which brought her to 491 American today. And she said, somebody should have told Cammie's law school that chronic drunkenness isn't a disability. I mean, maybe it is a little bit. I mean, drunk or high. I mean, that's a very hard game to play with Kamala Harris, because it could just be, as Donald Trump said, she may just be a low IQ person, but it's hard to tell. And I'm hoping we don't have 4 years coming up to play that game, because that may be rage inducing, although that then would be perfect for people who like to listen to Planet Rage, planetrage.show. Harry Pilgrim came in with 5,626, so that's $4.05 in American today. And Eric PP coming in with 1,456, which was $1.05. All very much appreciated, as is giving me your time to listen to the show. I hope you get stuff out of it. I hope you learn new things. I hope I give you a little nugget of something that the next time you're arguing with somebody and trying to make a point, that it proves your point and makes you feel like just the smartest guy or gal in the room, and like, I heard that here. If you get value out of the show, share some value back. Tell a friend about it. Post about it on social media. And let's brace for the next show, episode number 300, where we can hopefully revel in having a president that has been announced, that has been elected, with better things on the horizon. But until next week, go out and vote. I am Darren O'Neill. Thanks for listening.